This is MSO Sports. I'm Rick Moore, and talking now once again with our basketball insider, Mike Grenier. Mike, welcome back.
Well, it's great to be back, Rick. We're really in the thick of it, even though all these NBA series have just started. We've seen some great games already.
Yeah, I want you to tell us about that, because I have not invested in watching the other teams in the playoffs. I'll read about them the next day, of course. But tell me what you've seen, and I think, why don't we start with the Eastern Conference, because the one thing that does jump off the page to me is the Knicks' two-game lead over the Sixers.
Oh, yeah, and you know what? It should not be a two-game lead. There's been a lot of talk on the Internet and on TV, and I watched the game last night, and there's no way that the officiating did not play a big role in that game last night in the final 5 or 6 seconds, because the 76ers were up by 2 points. They inbounded the ball, and they were trying to get timeouts. Various players were calling for timeouts. The refs ignored them or didn't see them. The Philadelphia coach, Nurse, was trying to call a timeout. And when Maxey received the inbound pass, Jalen Brunson just spun him around. Somebody grabbed him by the Maxey by the jersey. And no foul was called, so Maxey lost control of the ball, and it led to Dante DiVincenzo, former Villanova guy, who was Brunson's teammate at Villanova, by the way, hit a three-pointer to win it for the Knicks, basically. So I know that seeing Embiid after the game in the locker room, he was very downcast and extremely upset that they lost, but more so at the way that they lost, because he felt the officiating played a role. He didn't want to dwell on it too much. He said, now that we're going home, we can still win the series. We got to win our two games in Philadelphia. But he was extremely upset, and justifiably so, I thought. I thought the Knicks stole one last night. They've been playing well, but Jalen Brunson, who's the star of the team, is shooting something like 28% first two games, and despite that, the Knicks have won the first two games.
Well, that bodes well for the Knicks, I suppose, because he's not always going to be off like that.
That's right, and the other great game last night was, you know, for people who stayed up to watch it, I can't call it a West Coast game. Denver's in the Mountain Time Zone, Rick's right, so it's just a two-hour difference. But the Lakers were having their way with Denver, leading by 20 in the third quarter, and Denver crept back into it, and they had the final possession of the game, and Jamal Murray hit a baseline jumper over the 7-foot-tall Anthony Davis, and Denver came back from 20 down and won by 2 points, literally at the buzzer. So now they have a 2-0 lead as they head to L.A., and I tell you, you know, I've been saying to people, Nick Giannino of Salem News, who covers the Celtics so well, grew up as a Lakers fan. Shame on him, right, Rick?
I didn't know that, but now
I've
got something to attack him with. All right.
Well, these younger generations, they grew up with ESPN, so they don't necessarily have a loyalty to the local team, which, of course, is the Celtics. We grew up in a different era where all these games weren't on TV. We grew up following the Celtics because they were the closest team to us. They were on the radio with Johnny Most, and they were on local TV, maybe. But Nick grew up with watching the Lakers. He loves the Lakers. And we talked just before that Lakers-Denver series started, and he felt the Lakers had a good chance of upsetting that. And I said, Nick, I don't think what the Lakers do is sustainable, because they'll have to play LeBron James and Anthony Davis a lot of minutes to beat Denver. And sure enough, in game one, Anthony Davis played 45 minutes and LeBron played 41 minutes, and it didn't work out. The Denver controlled the fourth quarter and won by 10. Last night, Anthony Davis was 14 for 15 from the floor, Rick, and through the first three quarters. He had 30 or 32 points, and LeBron was going crazy. But they wilted in the fourth quarter, and that's when they lost the game, because they played so many minutes. And the coach, Darvin Ham, is sort of caught between a rock and a hard place. He can't win without those two guys on the floor, those two main stars. However, if he leaves them out there, they're going to wear out in the fourth quarter. And that's what has happened in the first two games. That's why the Lakers down 0-2 against the defending NBA champions.
Who else is support for Denver besides the big guy? What do they have?
Jokic. I mean, Jamal Murray is just the second best player on the team. And I loved his attitude last night after the game. He shot 9 for 24, okay? But he said, when I wasn't shooting well, I was looking to pass the ball to my teammates, and I tried to play defense. I wanted to play as hard a defense as possible, and my teammates kept supporting me, saying, don't worry, you'll get your shots. And sure enough, after LeBron missed a wide-open shot with 12 seconds left in the game that would have put the game out of reach for the Lakers, Denver rebounded, and Jamal Murray ended up with the ball, and he went around a screen, and he went to the baseline. He took the shot with, maybe a second and a half left, and it dropped through, and he was mobbed. And there's just tremendous camaraderie on that team. Michael Porter Jr. is another great scorer for them. They had three guys scoring 20 or more last night. They had Murray, they had Porter with 20, and Jokic, of course, he had his typically crazy game, Rick. 27 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists.
Good Lord.
20 rebounds in today's game is really hard to do. Rick, you know, when I grew up with an era where players didn't shoot as accurately as they do now, and that's why, you know, Bill Russell and Will Chamberlain were phenomenal rebounders anyway, but it wasn't, it was not uncommon for them to get 25 rebounds in a game or 32 rebounds in a game and that kind of stuff. That usually doesn't happen these days because the players today are more accurate in their shooting. There aren't as many rebounds to go around. But yet, you constantly yoke it up there with 17, 18 rebounds, and last night he had 20 rebounds. And he was strong down the stretch because he's still a young guy. And even though he's the strangest-looking dude, right, Rick? He doesn't look like he's even in physical condition.
Right.
Yet he played 41 minutes last night, and you know, he shot over 50%. He had the 27 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists, a couple of steals. He makes every big play down the stretch. Man, if I'm a Denver fan, you have a lot of faith they're going to win as long as he's playing.
Right, right. Okay, very quickly, I guess, anything else that you noticed jump out at you so far early in the,
yeah,
in the playoffs?
Definitely. You know what? It's funny, Rick, when you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, the way they played under Doc Rivers, they went 17-19, and he couldn't seem to get them settled in to play his style of ball. They did improve defensively. I kind of thought the Bucks would kind of go down in a hurry against the Indiana Pacers, who were a high scoring team. But you know, the Bucks came out on Sunday and they blew out the Indiana Pacers, and Damian Lillard had 35 points in the first half, a career high for a half, I believe. Didn't score in the second half, but they had enough of a lead. They won. They cruised to the win. They won by 15. So to me, that was a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you know, and I guess you know the other thing is the Cleveland Cavaliers are off to a great start. They had their first two home games. First two games of the series were at home against the Orlando Magic, who, by the way, finished only one game behind Cleveland in the standings. Otherwise, you know, Cleveland might have been on the road for the first two games. But, you know, basically they've taken care of business the first two games. They won by 15, won by 17. So Cleveland's playing well. They're up two games to nothing as they head to Orlando. So those are, to me, the biggest surprise has been Milwaukee playing so well the other night and just crushing the Indiana Pacers. Who knows if that'll happen in game two. They're playing tonight. But to me, they were a surprise in the sense that they had played very poorly the last 30 to 35 games of the season.
Right, right. Well, the one thing that stands out to me with the Celtics game, and I don't want to overthink it, but I was curious in the fourth quarter how short the bench was compared or contrasted to how it's been the last couple of weeks. And maybe I'm reading it wrong, but I mean, the I'd call them fringe players or whatever, but some of the guys at the end of the bench didn't get in, and I didn't realize that Cornette was being rested. But does that mean anything at all? Because
yeah,
they do have three days off between the first two games.
Right. No, I think you're right on target there, Rick, because they did shorten the bench in the fourth quarter when they were up big. And even with the, you know, they kept the starters in there, and the starters kind of relaxed, and that's why the lead went from 31 to, 14 or 13. I think it was a 26-7 Miami run that sort of made things a little too interesting in the final 4 minutes of the game. And I'm just stunned that Jason Tatum was on the floor with less than a minute and a half left and taking a hard hit from Caleb.
Oh, that was awful, yeah.
That should have been definitely a technical. Well, it should have been perhaps a flagrant and a one-game suspension because the intent was clear. Caleb Martin at practice today tried to say that Drew Holiday pushed him into Jason Tatum. No way. When you look at the replay, there's no way that Drew Holiday had anything to do with that play. And it came after a timeout that Spoelstra called. And I was wondering, when they went back on the floor, what the heck Tatum was doing out there up by 16 or 17 with a minute and a half left.
Right.
And you don't put players in that position. You got to yank your starters at that point. And that's when you put in your end-of-the-bench guys. And Sam Hauser, who shot it so well in the first half, four in a row after missing two threes. He hit four threes in a row that helped establish the lead. He barely played in the second half, and Pritchard didn't play nearly as much as I thought he would.
Yeah, that's what I thought, and I was wondering about that. I don't know if that strategy or if that is a mistake, but, I mean, those guys had played so well, and when you put the end of the bench guys in, you got a 30-point lead. It gets down to 10. So what? You got 3 seconds left.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're not putting anybody at risk in terms of injury. And, you know, teams that are losing by 30 or 25 or whatever in the playoffs, and they get the frustration going, and that's when they foul hard and they commit borderline illegal, you know, technical foul, flagrant fouls. And that's what Caleb Martin did. And Caleb Martin only scored like 4 points, another reason for his frustration. Mm. So Jason Tatum should not have been on the floor. Jaylen Brown, who came to sort of, I love the way they rallied around Tatum, though, right, Rick?
Yes.
I mean, Jaylen Brown got in Caleb Martin's face. Porzingis was there. But my secondary thought there is, what are they doing there? Why were they even on the floor?
Right. Nope.
They're not even on the floor. I don't know if Missoula was playing scared a little bit, thinking Miami was going to cut it to 6 or 7. But like you said, even if they did, there's 2 seconds left in the game, and the game would have ended with the Celtics winning by 10 instead of 20. So I didn't understand Missoula's quote after the game saying, I enjoyed watching that, meaning Tatum get hurt, you know, injured. Well, not possibly, he didn't get injured, but I was wondering what was going to happen there. Like, he enjoyed that. I don't understand that attitude from a head coach. You have an all-star player, the face of the franchise, really possibly getting, you know, injured on a dirty play like that, and he's saying, I enjoyed watching that. I didn't get Missoula, the philosophy behind that quote. It just escapes me as an observer, Rick.
The only thing I can think of is the response by the Celtics. I enjoyed watching Jaylen Brown go to his defense. I thought that was pretty cool.
Right, and Tatum actually said thanks, something along the lines, hey, thanks for that. And Porzingis was also involved.
Yeah.
And I think Drew Holiday made a couple of steps. So it cleared up pretty quickly. But there was no reason. My point is that I don't think there was any reason for Tatum to be out there.
Yeah, and given what happened last year, you know, in the Miami series, we're all familiar with, you know, and Missoula got a pass because he was a rookie coach.
Right.
And during the course of the season, very little to complain about. But to me, that was just a bit of a red flag. Like, what are you doing? You've had so much success here, you know, with this rotation. What are you doing? And you had a huge lead. So I wonder, you know, I suppose that's picking nits, but there's a little bit of a red flag that's going up.
No, I couldn't agree more because, like I said, Hauser, 4 for 6, he hit 4 3-pointers in a row after missing his first two. He only played 14 minutes.
Oh, wow.
He barely played in the second half. Pritchard played 24, and a lot of that came in the first half. And Horford played 26 off the bench and had, you know, 10 points. He played pretty well. But, you know, Jason Tatum played 41 minutes. And they had a 32-point lead at one point. He played 41 minutes. And, you know, Jaylen Brown, the rest of the guys were 34, 33. You know, Drew Holiday, 33. Porzingis, 34. But why was Tatum playing 41 minutes in a game that was a blowout?
Right.
Even with a minute and a half of, I didn't understand that move at all. So, you're right. It sounds like we're nitpicking. But when it's a 7-game series, you don't want him to build up those kinds of minutes in game 6, if it comes down to game 6 or game 7. I think you just, if you're Missoula, you've got a big lead like that, you've got to spot your reserves in there and give Tatum more of a break than he gave him in game 1. And we are nitpicking. They won by 20. Most people say, oh yeah, okay, it's no big deal. We go on to game 2, they have 3 days rest. But no, it is an issue, I think. Right now, we consider a minor issue because they've only played 1 game. But if it's trends like this, it's a concern.
Well, the other thing is the schedule changes now after tomorrow's game, and it goes from 3 days between games to down to 2 games. It's going to be every other day.
Well, no, I think they play Saturday, Rick. So that'll be actually a 3-day break.
Let me see here.
Saturday and Monday. They play Saturday and Monday.
Oh, you're right. It's 3, then 2,
yeah,
and then 2. Okay, yeah. You're right.
It does get back to, you know, every other day.
I see that now.
At least between the long travel between Boston and Miami, 3 hours, whatever it is, they give them an extra day. I don't know. Obviously, it's tailored around the TV schedule and all that stuff. But, you know, I think, in a sense, it helps the Celtics if Tatum's going to be playing 40 minutes a game, to rest him another day, to have another day's rest. But also, too, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking that Terry Rozier, our former Celtics player, who had some good seasons early in his career, he's recovering from a neck injury, and the talk out in Miami is that he might be ready for game four on Monday. So that would help the Miami cause. So I kind of want the games more scrunched together, right?
Yeah.
But Rozier, I mean, that's just speculation. There's been no official team doctor saying, he'll be ready for game four or game five, but he would add some fuel to that Miami offense because he'd be playing the point guard, which would free up Tyler Hero to play the off guard and just shoot from any way he wants. So that's another point, Rick. We should actually talk about how good Drew Holiday was defensively against Tyler Hero, who can be a Celtic killer. We've seen him score 25, 30. Of course, he missed last year's playoffs with a bad injury, but he was only 4 for 13 on Sunday, and a lot of that can be attributed to the sticky defense, the Drew Holiday. He makes it difficult for Hero to even get off shots. For him to take only 13 shots, I think it's quite an accomplishment, and you got to give credit to Drew Holiday because he's kind of still an underrated defender.
Well, the players on the court, if we, we talked about the coaching, but the players on the court were good. All seven or eight of them, they were solid in the opener.
There was no question. Yes, exactly. Jaylen Brown got off to a rough start there. He only had 5 points at the half. He missed his first two free throws. He only had the five. But he wound up with 17, so he had a decent second half. He shot 50%, 6 for 12. He had 6-8 rebounds, something like that. So he did fine. I'd like to see him get off to a faster start tomorrow night, Wednesday night. Porzingis was very good from outside. We saw him sometimes, Rick, don't you see him launch those three-pointers from almost like Caitlin Clark country?
Yes.
And you're thinking, why is he taking that shot?
Yep.
And then the ball slips through the basket, and you kind of just say, "I absolve him of his sins."
Yes, you know what I mean? Yes. I'm sitting back there. What are you doing? Oh, nice shot.
Exactly. And he was, he shot six, he shot, I think, what, four. For, he shot 7 for 13 overall, 4 for 8 on the threes. So I'll take a 50% three-point shooter any day because that's really good percentage on threes. So. I'd still love to see it. Miami plays that collapsing zone defense, Rick, which we saw Sunday. They just don't even bother to play man-to-man. They play a zone. They're trying to keep the Celtics, especially Tatum, I think, from penetrating. And so you have to post Porzingis. He did it a few times. Mazzulla had him post up against Tyler Hero, as a matter of fact, who's not exactly a good defensive player. And Porzingis is much taller. And you just have Porzingis turn and shoot from, let's say, 13 or 14 feet instead of 24 feet. So I think that strategy still has to come into play. I think Mazzulla, in my opinion, is that Mazzulla needs to do that more often in case those threes aren't falling. The Celtics took 49 three-pointers in that first game. Of the 82 shots, 49 were three-pointers. So I'm not in love with the three-pointers.
Yeah, there was a point there that I was getting nervous and thinking, come on, guys, why don't you go to the basket? Because you give me the 2 points instead of the missed three.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, Tatum seems to be the only one that's trying to force the action.
Yes.
In terms of going to the basket. Even when he's double-teamed, he tries to work his way around the two defenders and take it to the basket and draw a foul. He did a few times, right?
Well, what's funny,
the line, Tatum only shot 1 for 8 on threes, but he was 8 for 8 from the foul line. So at least it tells you that he was taking it to the basket. He took at least 8 free throws. I mean, that's not fantastic, but it's much better than what anybody else could do.
Holiday's been getting given credit for those corner shots, but he goes to the basket well when he wants to, doesn't he? He can drive.
He does. He's so crafty. I think he's the type of guy, I don't think he cares whether he scores 8 or 22. If he can do the job defensively and disrupt the opposing team's offense and distribute the ball the way he can, he wants to win a championship. He won one with Milwaukee, but he'd really love to win one with Boston. And, he's still going to play a few more years, but they have two championships under his belt. I think he'd be really proud of that. And Celtics fans want that in the worst way. Speaking of that, Rick, I don't know if you saw, on the day before the game, three of our favorite guys in the entire Celtic world.
Yes.
Right? And you know who I'm talking about.
Yep.
Father Parrish.
Yes.
Kevin McHale. Larry Bird. Show up for signing like Dick's Sporting Goods has some kind of athletic center that they've built at the Prudential Center where people can do rock climbing and do all these fun things. And so they must have paid a load of money to bring those three legends in. And they were having a blast, McHale, Bird, and Parrish, talking to the media, signing. There was a line that seemed to go for a mile and a half of fans bringing basketball and memorabilia for the three legends to sign. What a great coup that was to bring those three guys in the day before game one of the playoffs.
It was great, and I saw Cedric Maxwell with them as well.
Right. Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, I forgot about it. How can you forget about Max? Right. Cedric Maxwell as well. And you know, I thought McHale made a telling quote. He said something like, you know, when we were playing in the 80s and we won those three titles, it made it 16 championships in 35 years. And that's Red Auerbach for you, meaning Auerbach had been a coach as well as general manager and engineered a lot of trades. Mm-hmm. They included those guys from the 1980s. And actually, McHale's math is a little off, Rick. Their first title was in 1957, and the last title they had with McHale and Bird was 1986. So he actually had 16 championships in 30 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You think of how dominant that was.
Yep.
I mean, you know, the Patriots, of course, football is so much tougher. It's so much more. The Patriots were in 9 Super Bowls. They won 6 in a 20-year period. But being in 9 Super Bowls in 20 years is a phenomenal accomplishment. I think the Yankees have won like 27 championships over a long period of time. But the Celtics winning 16 in 30 years is an absolutely amazing accomplishment.
And what was great to see for me was the fact that the big three went on to other places. You know, they went back home and they played well and coached whatever it was. They went back home.
Right.
But then they come back to Boston. That's pretty cool.
It is cool. I mean, and you could tell they were enjoying themselves. Parrish made some off-color remark to answer a question. But he was having, and they were all roaring, laughing about different things. And I know Larry Bird was in the North End the day before they got together there, having a meal at one of his favorite restaurants from his playing days. So for the three of them to come back to Boston, I'm sure there were a lot of stories that were told before they went down and sat and signed so many autographs.
That sounds like a great event. I know a long time ago, Rick Fox did a signing at the Liberty Tree Mall, and
yeah.
Rick Fox, my older daughter, he was her favorite player, so we got to meet him. He was very young at that time, before he became
right.
captain and so on, but what a nice man, you know, and he took his time talking with everybody, and you like
yeah.
to see that, you know, so that's cool when you can interact. All right, let me shift gears here, Mike, as we head toward the finish line here, and I think it is worthy of talking, and that is to me, disrespect the Celtics have gotten from the NBA with respect to the awards. And I know that when I first heard that there were no Celtics nominated for any individual award, I thought, okay, well, that's typical of the 50s and 60s, but wait a minute.
Right.
They nominate three people in each category now. So you're telling me that in none of the categories there's not a Celtic player at least in the top three?
Well, yeah, that's a good point, Rick. You're right. I mean, it's funny because 2 months ago, Jason Tatum was in the MVP conversation. Then he dropped out all of a sudden. I didn't see his play drop off, but his name dropped out of the MVP talk. Jokic's going to win it anyway.
He's sure.
By a landslide.
Of course.
But you know, Jrue Holiday should be up there for a defensive award. Tatum should be up there for something. You know, you can even make an argument for Pritchard being like a great sixth man because he played so well the second half of the season, actually pretty much all season. But, you know, when you have a Pritchard coming off the bench and scoring 35 in one game and 34 in another, you know, that's pretty darn good. But, you know, you're right. Jaylen Brown, I mean, Jason Tatum came out after a game about 3 weeks ago and said that Jaylen Brown should be considered first-team defensive all-star. So he went to bat for his teammate as a defensive player. And so you're right. There hasn't been much talk about them on a national basis. And the Celtics have had to stump for themselves, for their own teammates, not stumping for themselves individually, but stumping for their teammates to
yep.
get various awards. And I guess it's just not going to happen. You know, guys like Luka Doncic are going to be considered for things. And, you know, I watched that Dallas team play on Sunday. They got crushed by the Clippers. They were losing by 35 or 40 at one point. And they considered Doncic and Kyrie Irving superstars. And I fail to see how anybody can consider those two guys superstars when they're half a player. They're both good offensive players, but they don't play a stitch of defense.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of them has ever played defense, Doncic and Kyrie Irving. And do people fail to see that? They are very feeble defensively. And when the Celtics beat them by 45 or 50, I remember Doncic saying, the Celtics are in another class, they're much better than everybody else, which is which is true at the time. However, people fail to see the inadequacies of these superstar names who have to play both ways, offense and defense.
You know what's funny, Mike, is ESPN, all the NFL, the NBA Network, and all those, they go for the highlights, they go for the spectacular shots, the dunks, and that sells. That's marketing. They make money on that, and the players make money on that, and it's clever. But yeah, a true sports fan, maybe I shouldn't say it that way. I, as a sports fan,
right,
I absolutely love when I see a Celtic defender steal the ball or block a shot. In fact, Derek White blocked one the other day that I thought was like Bill Russell. He blocked it to a teammate.
Right.
And
exactly.
to see how quick they are and how anticipatory they can become and then turn it into a play, to me, that is a more beautiful sports move that shows off athleticism than any score.
And of course, it's also part of the teamwork that's involved in playing the two-way game, offense and defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rick, to underscore your point, I'm going to name a team here that gets no credit nationally, but yet is could be in the mix for the championship. And we're talking the Oklahoma City Thunder. They finished first, even ahead of Denver, by half a game or a game in the standings. They have the number one seed. They won a close game the other night. New Orleans Pelicans have been playing very well. Zion Williamson didn't play again the other night because of an injury. But OKC pulled out a game at home. And I thought what was great about the OKC team, they do play together. The one guy who's considered something of a star is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And that guy is the only player other than Michael Jordan who has averaged 30 points and shot over 50% over a two-year period. That's hard to do for a guy, shoot over 50% and score at least 30 points per game. And when he won the game the other night, again, sort of late in the game, last 4 or 5 seconds, he was interviewed on national TV. It was a late game, so it was like at midnight or whatever it was, local time here. And as he was talking to the interviewer, it was 3 or 4 teammates got around him. They weren't invited, but they got around him, and then it became 8 or 9 teammates. And they were listening to him talk, and they were nodding their heads in approval. And they were sort of showing their appreciation for him as the one so-called star on that team. But they were sticking together as a team. Even though they weren't being asked to be interviewed, they were surrounding their teammate. And I thought that was so cool that they would do that. And you could tell that's a young team. They might not be good enough to win it this year. They may be a year or two away. But you can see them on the rise. And you could tell they're on the rise because any team that finishes first in the conference over the Denver Nuggets has to be really good. So OKC is a team to watch, and I say that only from the standpoint of they play a really nice team game, but they're just, they seem to have some really good personalities on the team. They have a coach that no one's ever heard of. It's his rookie year. And they're in it together, and they're improving. And who knows how deep they're going to be. They might end up playing Denver in the finals of the Western Conference. Who knows? But it's a team to watch, and I love the team aspect that they bring to the game.
Absolutely. That's what we always talk about with the Celtics, and that's been the trademark of the Celtics over the years. I'm going to keep my eye on OKC. Trouble is, I don't get TNT with my smart TV, so I'll have to follow it some other way.
Well, Charles Barkley, of course, he's been hammering away saying the 76ers are going to win this series against the Knicks, and he's saying that they're going to face the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Final, and they would beat the Celtics. Now, I don't believe him, but he believes in the 76ers. Of course, he was believing a little less last night after they lost. It was a difficult loss, though, for them. I really thought the officials kind of took that game away from them. The Knicks, under Tom Thibodeau, they're a physically tough team, Rick, and they play a real scrambling, rugged type of defense. And without Julius Randle, their second player, who's been injured for two-thirds of the season, they have to play that way. But they really hustle and fight for everything. And that's a Tom Thibodeau team. They're a hard-nosed team. When they play, if and when they play the Celtics, that'll be a really physical series.
Okay. As we record this on Tuesday, who are you watching tonight?
Well, I got to watch the Bucks. I got to watch the Bucks to see if they can sustain what they did a couple nights ago when they were leading by 25-30. I just didn't expect that because they have been playing very poorly under Doc Rivers, but they won handily the other night against the Pacers, who could score a lot of points. So we'll see how that goes. But other than that, we revert back to the Celtics on Wednesday. So that'll be good to watch. And, you know, we'll see how these other series play out. But it's so interesting because you're always trying to speculate. So many of these national people, Rick, are always saying, the Celtics, who are they going to play in the finals? I don't look at it that way. I think the Knicks are a troublesome team. I think if the Bucks play the way they did in Game 1, they're a troublesome team. Philadelphia, if they come back, because Embiid is so great individually, they could cause some havoc. So, you know, there's a lot of interesting basketball remains to be played.
Good point, Mike, and we'll do it again. That's our Basketball Insider, Mike Grenier. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.